5. Political Sovereignty. While the Master's teaching concerning the sovereignty of God is a truth, only complicated by the subsequent appearance of the religion about him among the world's religions, his presentations concerning political sovereignty are vastly complicated by the political evolution of nation life during the last 1900 years and more. In the times of Jesus, there were only two great world powers, the Roman Empire in the West and the Han Empire in the East, and these were widely separated by the Parthian Kingdom and other intervening lands of the Caspian and Turkestan regions. We have, therefore, in the following presentation, departed more widely from the substance of the Master's teachings at Urmia concerning political sovereignty, at the same time attempting to depict the import of such teachings as they are applicable to the peculiarly critical stage of the evolution of political sovereignty in the 20th century after Christ. War on Urantia will never end so long as nations cling to the elusive notions of unlimited national sovereignty. There are only two levels of relative sovereignty on an inhabited world, the spiritual free will of the individual mortal and the collective sovereignty of mankind as a whole. Between the level of the individual human being and the level of the total of mankind, all groupings and associations are relative, transitory, and of value only in so far as they enhance the welfare, well-being, and progress of the individual and the planetary grand total, man and mankind. Religious teachers must always remember that the spiritual sovereignty of God overrides all intervening and intermediate spiritual loyalties. Someday, civil rulers will learn that the Most Highs rule in the kingdoms of men. This rule of the Most Highs in the kingdoms of men is not for the especial benefit of any especially favored group of mortals. There is no such thing as a chosen people. The rule of the Most Highs, the overcontrollers of political evolution, is a rule designed to foster the greatest good to the greatest number of all men and for the greatest length of time. Sovereignty is power, and it grows by organization. This growth of the organization of political power is good and proper, for it tends to encompass ever-widening segments of the total of mankind. But this same growth of political organizations creates a problem at every intervening stage between the initial and natural organization of political power, the family, and the final consummation of political growth, the government of all mankind, by all mankind, and for all mankind. Starting out with parental power in the family group, political sovereignty evolves by organization as families overlap into consanguineous clans, which become united, for various reasons, into tribal units, super-consanguineous political groupings. And then, by trade, commerce, and conquest, tribes become unified as a nation, while nations themselves sometimes become unified by empire. As sovereignty passes from smaller groups to larger groups, wars are lessened. That is, minor wars between smaller nations are lessened, but the potential for greater wars is increased as the nations wielding sovereignty become larger and larger. Presently, when all the world has been explored and occupied, when nations are few, strong, and powerful, when these great and supposedly sovereign nations come to touch borders, when only oceans separate them, then will the stage be set for major wars, worldwide conflicts. So-called sovereign nations cannot rub elbows without generating conflicts and eventuating wars. The difficulty in the evolution of political sovereignty from the family to all mankind lies in the inertia resistance exhibited on all intervening levels. Families have on occasion defied their clan, while clans and tribes have often been subversive of the sovereignty of the territorial state. Each new and forward evolution of political sovereignty is, and has always been, embarrassed and hampered by the scaffolding stages of the previous developments in political organization. And this is true because human loyalties, once mobilized, are hard to change. The same loyalty which makes possible the evolution of the tribe makes difficult the evolution of the supertribe, the territorial state. And the same loyalty, patriotism, which makes possible the evolution of the territorial state, vastly complicates the evolutionary development of the government of all mankind. Political sovereignty is created out of the surrender of self-determinism, first by the individual within the family, and then by the families and clans in relation to the tribe and larger groupings. This progressive transfer of self-determination from the smaller to ever larger political organizations has generally proceeded unabated in the East since the establishment of the Ming and the Mughal dynasties. In the West, it obtained for more than 1,000 years, right on down to the end of the World War, when an unfortunate retrograde movement temporarily reversed this normal trend by re-establishing the submerged political sovereignty of numerous small groups in Europe. Urantia will not enjoy lasting peace until the so-called sovereign nations intelligently and fully surrender their sovereign powers into the hands of the Brotherhood of Men, mankind government. Internationalism, leagues of nations, can never bring permanent peace to mankind. Worldwide confederations of nations will effectively prevent minor wars and acceptably control the smaller nations, but they will not prevent world wars nor control the 3, 4, or 5 most powerful governments. In the face of real conflicts, one of these world powers will withdraw from the league and declare war. You cannot prevent nations going to war as long as they remain infected with the delusional virus of national sovereignty. Internationalism is a step in the right direction. An international police force will prevent many minor wars, but it will not be effective in preventing major wars, conflicts between the great military governments of Earth. As the number of truly sovereign nations, great powers, decreases, so do both opportunity and need for mankind government increase. When there are only a few really sovereign, great powers, either they must embark on the life and death struggle for national, imperial supremacy, or else, by voluntary surrender of certain prerogatives of sovereignty, they must create the essential nucleus of supranational power which will serve as the beginning of the real sovereignty of all mankind. Peace will not come to Urantia until every so-called sovereign nation surrenders its power to make war into the hands of a representative government of all mankind. Political sovereignty is innate with the peoples of the world. When all the peoples of Urantia create a world government, they have the right and the power to make such a government sovereign. And when such a representative or democratic world power controls the world's land, air, and naval forces, peace on earth and goodwill among men can prevail. But not until then. To use an important 19th and 20th century illustration, the 48 states of the American Federal Union have long enjoyed peace. They have no more wars among themselves. They have surrendered their sovereignty to the federal government, and through the arbitrament of war, they have abandoned all claims to the delusions of self-determination. While each state regulates its internal affairs, it is not concerned with foreign relations, tariffs, immigration, military affairs, or interstate commerce. Neither do the individual states concern themselves with matters of citizenship. The 48 states suffer the ravages of war only when the federal government's sovereignty is in some way jeopardized. These 48 states, having abandoned the twin sophistries of sovereignty and self-determination, enjoy interstate peace and tranquility. So will the nations of Urantia begin to enjoy peace when they freely surrender their respective sovereignties into the hands of a global government, the sovereignty of the Brotherhood of Men. In this world state, the small nations will be as powerful as the great, even as the small state of Rhode Island has its 2 senators in the American Congress, just the same as the populous state of New York or the large state of Texas. The limited state sovereignty of these 48 states was created by men and for men. The superstate, national sovereignty of the American Federal Union, was created by the original 13 of these states for their own benefit and for the benefit of men. Sometime the supranational sovereignty of the planetary government of mankind will be similarly created by nations for their own benefit and for the benefit of all men. Citizens are not born for the benefit of governments. Governments are organizations created and devised for the benefit of men. There can be no end to the evolution of political sovereignty short of the appearance of the government of the sovereignty of all men. All other sovereignties are relative in value, intermediate in meaning, and subordinate in status. With scientific progress, wars are going to become more and more devastating until they become almost racially suicidal. How many world wars must be fought, and how many leagues of nations must fail before men will be willing to establish the government of mankind and begin to enjoy the blessings of permanent peace and thrive on the tranquility of goodwill, worldwide goodwill among men.